From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world, I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, choices. We all have them, don't we? Eldon Taylor joins us. Should be fascinating. Here's what's happening. Oh boy, here we go again. A salmonella outbreak in Foster Farms chicken contains several antibiotic-resistant strains that may explain the unusually high rate of hospitalization. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said that some salmonella strains found in the outbreak were resistant to one or more drugs and that 42% of those sickened have been hospitalized. The U.S. Department of Agriculture issued a public health alert on Monday linking some raw chicken products produced in California to this outbreak. The agency's Food and Safety Service found chicken produced by Foster Farms at three California facilities with strains of salmonella. So far, 278 illnesses have been reported in 18 states, 77% of those cases in California alone. Food safety coach Jeff Nelken with us. He kind of holds our hand when it comes to these kinds of stories. Well, Jeff, here we are again, another salmonella outbreak.
Well, again, let's keep in mind, very important to those people that are cooking chicken, we must reach 165 degrees, okay? Again, having a thermometer helps, not using your finger, not judging by clear liquids, you know, running. Use a thermometer, get to that 165, and let's get away from pre-washing raw chicken, because we're finding now that when people wash raw chicken, they splash the salmonella all around the kitchen.
Ah, so unless you have that Clorox, you better not do that.
Right.
Jeff, with all these cases, I mean, they seem to be creeping around in various states. Do you find that maybe a week or two later, even more cases pop up, even though the chicken may have been recalled already?
Well, it's very possible because some of the people have put these into freezers.
Oh.
So
it survives that, too.
It can be around for a couple of weeks.
You can't freeze kill salmonella, can you?
No, not at all.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. Jeff Nelken, his website, foodsafetycoach.com. Well, the United States is going to cut off aid to Egypt in the wake of that July coup against President Mohamed Morsi and the turmoil that has followed. Morsi, of course, was part of the Muslim Brotherhood. We'll see what happens there. Scientists, engineers, and policymakers, they're all trying to figure out ways that drones can be used better and more smartly, more precise, less damaging to us, with longer range and better staying power. One method under development is by increasing the autonomy on the drone itself. Listen to this. Eventually, drones might have the technical ability to make lethal decisions on their own to respond to a programmed set of inputs, select a target, fire their weapons without human reviewing or checking the results. I don't like that at all. As a matter of fact, Tom and I were getting ready to do part of the show tonight, and about an hour ago, there was a little earthquake here in the Los Angeles area. It was about a 2.0, but we immediately went to the USGS.gov website to find out how big it was and where the epicenter was. This is what it says on the website. Due to a lapse in federal funding, the USGS Earthquake Hazards Program has suspended most of its operations. Now, while the USGS will continue to monitor and report on earthquake activity, the accuracy or timeliness of some earthquake information products, as well as the availability on some web pages, could be affected by our reduced level of operation. Can you believe that? It's happening there, too. And the end of the government shutdown, where is it? Who knows? President Barack Obama says, look, I'll negotiate, but this is what I want. I want a raising of the federal borrowing limit. I want a short-term spending plan. I want to avoid the first-ever U.S. default next week, and then we'll talk later. Nobody knows what's going on yet. And there's talk now that the Social Security Administration has begun warning the public it cannot guarantee full benefit payments if the debt ceiling isn't increased. This is a sin. Do you know how many people in this country rely on their SSI checks? These are old retired people. These are disabled people. They can't go out and get work. They have to live on this little check that they get. And now that is in jeopardy. Let's check in with registered investment advisor, Miss Shedlock. Miss, this is abominable.
It is, George. And you know what? Your little earthquake story that you told is just the tip of the iceberg here. I got an email from someone today who contacted their senator, happened to be Senator Feinstein, in California. And this person got an automated email response that said, due to the government shutdown, we can't answer your email. Now, this person wanted to comment on the shutdown and obviously couldn't. Meanwhile, 3 days ago, and I don't know if you know this, but Congress, the House, passed a bill that said they are going to back pay all of the government employees who didn't receive, you know, their checks. In other words, we're giving the government free vacation. We've shut down all the national parks. We've shut down national monuments. We've shut down the earthquake center, which I just found out about from you tonight. But all of those people, they're going to get their checks. Now, what about these Social Security people? Well, they need them for day-to-day.
They have to. They function. Many people I know on SSI function paycheck to paycheck, Mish. So do some people who work. But, I mean, these poor folks who are on fixed income and they rely on this government check that they work their tails off during their lifetime, if that stops, what are they going to do?
George, well, I don't know. I think this is going to be resolved actually this week. The Senate, or at the latest, sometime next week, the Senate is considering sending a bill back to the House that's going to grant Obama the ability to raise the debt ceiling for a year, and then they'll revisit it. Hopefully we don't go through this again, but we've gone through this three times.
Yeah,
so
we probably will. We probably will. Mish, let's keep watching this thing. Mish's blog, by the way, you'll find on our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. President Barack Obama will nominate Federal Reserve Vice Chairperson Janet Yellen to the next head of the U.S. Central Bank. That'll be done on Wednesday. That's right now in most time zones. If confirmed by Congress, Ms. Yellen would replace Ben Bernanke, who has held that post for 8 years. She has taught at Harvard University and the London School of Economics, as well as holding a series of senior administrative positions in the U.S. She will be the top person running the Federal Reserve, and in a moment, what really happened? We'll check in with Michael Rivero about the Federal Reserve and about all these other issues in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Let me tell you a little bit about Michael Rivero, our guest this hour, webmaster of whatreallyhappened.com, host of the What Really Happened radio shows on the Republic Broadcasting Network, formerly with the NAS. I'll add the A there, NASA, not the NAS. Don't worry about that. Or the NSA. Michael transitioned his image processing skills. He has worked on films such as Star Trek, The Day After Tomorrow, which was based on Whitley and Art's book, The Coming Global Superstorm. He has supervised effects on Brain Scan, Lost, Hawaii 5-0, but he's also been involved in a lot of other major issues, including, of course, looking at the Federal Reserve, which is one of the things we're going to talk about with Michael right now. Michael, welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing fine, George. Thank you for having me on the show again.
So what do you think about Ms. Yellen going to be named the head of the Federal Reserve?
Well, she's obviously very much part of that Federal Reserve culture and that Federal Reserve belief system. But I think right now, when we talk about whether or not the debt ceiling should be raised, there's a fundamental question behind that Americans need to be asking right now. And that is very simply that if the Constitution gives to the U.S. government the authority to create and issue public currency without interest, why for the last 100 years has the U.S. government borrowed all of the public currency at interest from that privately owned central bank. And the historical irony about this is the United States fought a revolution to be free of this kind of predatory banking. And they set up the country where the public currency was a public utility. It was spent into circulation by the government to buy what the government needed. It flowed through commerce without accruing any interest, was taxed back at the same amount at the end of the cycle to balance the books. And now we have, and we've had three times in this country, the same model that was imposed on us by King George III's Currency Act, which was that all commerce had to be conducted only using banknotes borrowed at interest from the Bank of England. This turned the public currency from being a public utility into a privatized for-profit operation.
Uh-huh.
And that is really the trap. And the trap is simply that when that first printed Federal Reserve note goes into circulation, more money is owed to the Federal Reserve than actually exists. And that's why for the last 100 years, the debt keeps piling up and piling up and piling up. And it doesn't matter how hard the American people work or how much they sacrifice, it can't be paid off because by design, the debt exceeds the amount of money in existence. There literally is not enough money in existence to ever pay off that debt. And every nation that is operating under this private central bank model is now drowning in trillions and trillions of debt.
It is, Michael, one of the greatest scams I've ever seen, where they literally produce money out of nothing. It's free to them, and then they lend it and make more money on nothing. It's unbelievable.
But they've been getting away with it around the world for hundreds of years. And they did it to the American people with the Federal Reserve Act. And President Woodrow Wilson, who signed that act, wrote later in his own diary, "I have unwittingly destroyed my own country." And he was absolutely correct. We're seeing the same problems all over Europe under that European Central Bank, which is the same system, all currencies borrowed at interest from that central bank. And by design, it just piles up the debt faster than the available money supply in order to hold the nation and its people basically in slavery to those bankers. And there is another way to run the economy. It's the way the economy was set up when this nation started. It's what works for the people. We've had three presidents who had the courage to stand up to those banking cartels, and that would be Andrew Jackson, who shut down the Second Bank of the United States, Abraham Lincoln with his government-issued greenbacks, and President John F. Kennedy with his executive order 11110 that issued the United States notes. And these currencies were used by the American people without constantly accruing interest to those private bankers.
Yes, but in the case of course, our friends, Mr. Kennedy and Mr. Lincoln, look what happened to them when they tried to say no to the federal banks.
It almost happened to Andrew Jackson when he shut down the Second Bank of the United States. There was an assassination attempt on him that
That's
failed.
Right.
When both pistols failed, and the assassin said with Jackson dead, money would be more plentiful. And I know a lot of people get sort of very weirded out when you suggest that there was a banker motive to the Kennedy assassination. But if you look at the Warren Commission, one of its members was John J. McCloy, president of the Chase Manhattan Bank and president of the World Bank. And I don't care how good a banker he is, he's not qualified to be investigating the murder of a president. So obviously he was there to make sure that that link to the United States notes as one of the many motives for the assassination was never made public.
Here's one of the things that confuses me, Michael, about the banking system. We look at the United States, and let's look at a third world nation somewhere. It doesn't matter what it is. We'll say Egypt. We, through these central banks, seem to be printing up more and more and more money, and we use it for anything we want as a nation. We borrow it out of thin air. Little countries like Egypt rely on people to give them money in order to really exist. How can we print it up and they can't?
Well, actually, many of those countries do, in fact, print it up. But in order to engage in international commerce, they basically have to transition through the U.S. dollar. Because at the end of World War II, the U.S. price for coming in and bailing Europe out of the mess they'd gotten into was the establishment of what is called the Bretton Woods Agreement. And this made the U.S. dollar the global trade and reserve currency.
Uh-huh.
So what the Federal Reserve did to the American people in guaranteeing the bankers a piece of the action of every transaction, Bretton Woods did to the rest of the world. Because whatever currency you're coming up with in your own country, you have got to convert it into U.S. dollars. Where do the dollars come from? They're borrowed at interest from the Federal Reserve.
They've got everything covered.
They've got everything covered. So the Bretton Woods was getting a piece of the action of global commerce for the Federal Reserve and its private owners. Now, of course, a lot of countries are trying to break away from Bretton Woods, and the United States is starting to attack, coincidentally, those very same countries. And another little wrinkle about this, of course, is back in 1971, when Richard Nixon ended gold convertibility, which was the promise the U.S. had made to get the rest of the world to go along with the dollar, that it would always be redeemable in gold for $35 an ounce. And then in 1971, France was looking at all those piles and piles of ink and paper notes piling up in their vaults, and they notified the United States they wanted to convert them back to gold at $35 an ounce. Nixon looked in Fort Knox and realized they had nowhere near enough gold to cover all those paper notes, and he ended gold convertibility. It actually is one case where the United States has defaulted on its debt obligations, despite Obama's claim that this would be the first time. That is simply not true. And so in order to bolster demand for the dollar in the absence of the gold, the U.S. government went out to all the resource-rich nations of the Middle East, and they established what was called the petrodollar deal. If those nations would sell their oil only for U.S. dollars...
It was brilliant.
Yeah, the U.S. would guarantee their military security, so other nations still had to send real manufactured goods and agricultural produce to the United States to get these ink and paper tickets in order to buy their oil from the Mideast nations. The U.S. was getting a piece of the action and making money off of other nations' oils. But as nations got tired of that deal and tried to break away, the U.S. inevitably declares war. In 2002, Saddam Hussein got permission from the United Nations to sell Iraq's oil for the euro instead of the dollar. 1 year later, the U.S. invades. They lynch Saddam Hussein, and Iraq's oil is back on the world market, but only for the U.S. dollar. Then you had Muammar Gaddafi in Libya, who decided he was going to set up his own state-controlled central bank and a value-based currency, the gold dinar. He then announced that Libya's oil was for sale, but only for the gold dinar. So the U.S. invades Libya, they kill Gaddafi, they smash their state bank, put in a brand new private central bank, issuing that public currency as a loan at interest. Libya's oil is back on the world market, but only for U.S. dollars. That's the reason they're trying to go into Syria. That's the reason they're trying to go into Iran. It's all about using U.S. military arms to force the world to continue with the Bretton Woods and petrodollar deals, from which the American banking cartel has profited handsomely while returning nothing of any real tangible value to the American people or to the world.
It is amazing how that all unfolds, Michael. What are the possibilities one day of the Chinese yuan or the Russian ruble being the world's currency? Could that happen?
It's already transitioning. China has made agreements with eight other nations to do direct currency exchanges between the yuan and their currency without going through the dollar. 1 week before that so-called terror attack in the mall in Nairobi, Kenya had set up a direct yuan exchange as well. The BRICS nations now have their own international trade currency. The world is trying to move away from Bretton Woods, and countries are dropping the U.S. dollar faster than the U.S. can reinvade them, which is why our current war policy is doomed to fail.
If we lose that strength, the dollar, worldwide, what happens to us?
It's going to be very hard times for the United States, because our financial center just got lazy. You just got used to all this wealth coming in from other people's commerce. We've allowed our manufacturing to decline over the last 30 years. Nobody wants to buy our agricultural produce because of the problems with GMO and other issues. And our nation is really not in a position to sustain itself commercially or compete internationally without that little piece of the action deal of Bretton Woods.
That is an amazing story. Michael, if people want more information on what you do, how can they find you? How can they listen to you?
Well, they can go over to my website, which is whatreallyhappened.com, and there's constant updates to story there. There's a video that's out based on one of my articles called All Wars Are Bankers' Wars. You might want to go to YouTube and look at that. And of course, as you mentioned earlier, I do a talk radio show on the Republic Broadcasting Network from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. Central Time, Monday through Friday.
All right. Just stay out of my time zone, Michael, okay?
Okay.
Stay with us. We're going to take some phone calls with you when we come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM as we talk about money, but how it really works and how it really affects you. Next time you pull it out of your wallet or your pocket, you'll understand. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. We'll take your calls. Michael Rivero with us here. His website again, whatreallyhappened.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com as well. How do you see the next few years going, Michael? They're saying that if this financial crisis continues, it could be worse than 2008.
I very much agree with that because obviously the debt is now completely out of control. The government says it's somewhere around $17 trillion, but a lot of economists have taken a look at unfunded mandates, off-the-book financing, and the current estimate is that the United States government is now some $220 trillion in debt. That works out to about $1 million per American family, and most American families are never going to see $1 million in their entire lifetime, let alone have it to simply turn over to the government as taxes for which they will receive no services in return. So we really do seem to have hit that spot where the government has simply, they've oversold the Treasury bonds. There's a huge Treasury bond bubble. They've emptied the Social Security Trust Fund, replaced that with Treasury bonds, which they cannot redeem. So in a very real sense, the U.S. government is defaulting on the American worker because that Social Security Trust Fund supposedly is funded by all those tax, those paycheck deductions over the worker's lifespan. Now they're saying that unless they can borrow money, they have to cut off the payments. Where did the money go? That's a rhetorical question. We know that during the Clinton administration, they basically borrowed all that money away from Social Security to come up with Bill Clinton's magic budget surplus, and now they can't put it back. But behind all of that, I mean, we're seeing all these signs of massive fraud in the financial system. It appears that the gold depository in the New York Federal Reserve has been holding people's gold on deposit, then leasing it out the back door.
Oh.
You know, when Germany tried to say we want our gold back, the Federal Reserve said it's going to take about 8 or 9 years. The Bank of France said it'll take 5 years to return Germany's gold. And then 1 week later, they invade Mali, which happens to be Africa's third largest gold producer. And the biggest hammer of all, though, are what are called the credit default swaps that have been sold by Wall Street against Europe's debt. And we know what dire straits Europe is in. Today, Greece was now saying they're going to have to start confiscating bank accounts to prop up their banking system. Wall Street has sold an estimated $90 trillion worth of credit default swaps against Europe's debt. When Europe starts to come apart, the holders of those swaps are going to start pounding on the doors of Wall Street demanding payment. Wall Street doesn't have the cash reserves to make the payment because credit default swaps are unregulated.
It's like a run on a bank, Michael, isn't
it? It'll be a run on the bank. It'll be run on the gold depository. When it is all held together with so much fraud. When it goes, it's all going to go it's going to go very rapidly. It's probably going to catch a lot of people by surprise. And our advice that we give out to our audience is you should have no more money in the bank right now than you need to cover your immediate obligations. You should have the rest under your own control. At home, have some of it in physical silver and physical gold, because what happened in Cyprus with the haircut or the scalping or the castration, whatever you want to call it, is now getting ready to happen in Greece. We know that confiscation of savings accounts is written into the financial plan for next year for Canada. They're already starting to talk about it happening here. When these bankers start to really feel that their system is about to come down, it won't matter what is legal or moral or right. They're just going to grab it for themselves, because you need to understand these private central banks are not in existence to serve the country or its people. They are there to serve themselves. The Federal Reserve is no more federal than Federal Express. It is a privately owned bank. They were going to call it the Third Bank of the United States, but too many people remembered all the problems with the First and Second Bank of the United States. So I personally don't see any way they can turn this around unless we have another president with the courage of an Andrew Jackson or a Lincoln or a Kennedy who's going to say, I'm going to shut this thing down. The reality is Congress could rescind that charter for the Federal Reserve anytime they want with a simple vote. But because Wall Street are such generous campaign donors, we're not going to see our Congress do it. So they're constrained by their belief system. And I really do think that at this point, a major crash that will bring down the American banking system and the federal government with it is now an inevitability. And people do need to be prepared. And I know a lot of people make fun of the preppers who are stockpiling food and water and everything. But there's a joke.
Until they need them one day. Watch.
Yeah, you're probably going to need it. And it's best to have it and not need it than need it and not have it.
Let's take some calls, and I've got more questions for you, too. Linda in Bloomington, Illinois, on the Wildcard Line. Hello, Linda.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, fantastic Linda. Thank you.
Fantastic program. Need to ask a question.
Sure.
Fred Thompson runs a commercial on TV all the time about buying your property, you know, so that you can go on a vacation and all this. Well, I heard
reverse
on
mortgage.
The radio, and I only heard it one time, and I've never heard it since. I think it was, is it AIG? Is this the company that's doing this? They're buying your house, and then they're giving you money
for
it?
Yeah, it's called a reverse mortgage. They are just one of many that are out there. I got to tell you, my 84-year-old mother will not do it. She won't go there. She's very uncomfortable with it. Some people are. Michael, what do you think of reverse mortgages?
Well, a reverse mortgage basically is they're getting you to cash out the equity in your property so that as you live out the rest of your life, all the wealth that you did build up over your working life basically gets drawn out and given back to the banks. You have nothing left to leave to the next generation. Unfortunately, in the current economy, a lot of people have no choice.
They need the money.
Reverse mortgage.
Yeah, they need the cash. I see. Can they throw you out of the house?
I have to be very honest. I do not know the circumstances. I know the commercials say you can live in your house as long as you want. But at this point, with the rules changing back and forth, we might actually see some evictions at the end of these reverse mortgages.
Let's go to Michael Kent, Washington. Hi, Michael. Thank you for calling.
Hello. Yeah, the man, the other Michael, he talked about the economy going down and the Chinese dollar being used for oil trade, mm-hmm. and things like that. Is there anything that the average citizen could do, make an investment or do something outside of gold to make money on the situation or be secure during that breakdown in the economy, in the American system?
Well, one of the things that Michael is recommending is you have enough cash put aside out of the bank for emergencies. But what about beyond that, Michael?
Well, obviously, if the Federal Reserve collapses, we're going to see the Federal Reserve notes become utterly worthless. We're going to wind up like Zimbabwe, where they're printing up paper notes worth $100
million. I mean, could that really happen?
Anything is possible. I mean, the banking sector of our economy is thinking only of its own survival and perpetuation. They're not really concerned at all with what's best for the nation as a whole, or we would not be in this mess to begin with. But one thing that people might want to do to deal with the possibility of the currency being declared utterly worthless is go out on various online auction sites and buy what is called junk silver. And what they mean by that, these are the pre-1965 U.S. silver coinage that lack numismatic value. They're not considered collectible, but they're a uniform, recognizable token of exchange that you can have in your survival kit.
If they're a quarter, they're a quarter.
Quarter's a quarter. Don't convert it into Federal Reserve notes or something. Gallon of gasoline, 25 cents, which is what it was before this whole inflation thing took off. I think the model that we want to be looking at is the collapse of the former Soviet Union, because I think when it happens in the U.S., it's going to happen just like that. It'll happen very quickly, probably take a lot of people by surprise. There's going to be about 3 months of extreme difficulty. We're going to have to help each other out. We're going to have to get involved in our community to make sure that everybody, especially our most fragile part of our population, gets through this. And after 3 months, we'll be forming a whole new government with a whole new set of rules. We'll go back to the Constitution. We'll say no more private central banking. And just like the Russian republics today are this powerful, growing economy, I think the new nation is going to be doing a lot better than the nation that we have now.
If that happens, Michael, what would happen to all these banks, these names we're all very familiar with, all their branches? what would, I mean, would they still be conducting business, or what happens to them, the private banks?
Well, I want to draw a line here between the private central bank, the Federal Reserve System that has the authority to create and issue money, versus regular depositor banks, which are a necessary and valuable part of society.
But some of those banks are part of the Federal Reserve.
Well, they're all dependent on the Federal Reserve for their capitalization. I think we're going to see most of them close, but then as soon as a new currency basis is established, we'll see them reopen again.
I mean, I've got a couple banks in St. Louis. They're locally owned banks by groups of investors, and they react like that if you need something. I think community banks are phenomenal.
I absolutely agree, because banking should be a public utility. The currency should be a public utility. This nation was originally set up on that model, and it worked extremely well, which is why the private central banking families of Europe worked so hard to overthrow it. First of all, with the First Bank of the United States, when Congress refused to renew that charter in 1811, the Rothschilds literally threatened the U.S. Congress. If you do not renew our charter, we will start a war. And they kept their word, the War of 1812. And even though the United States won the War of 1812, it forced them into so much debt they were forced to charter the Second Bank of the United States, which is the one that Andrew Jackson shut down.
Next up, we go to Jim, first-time caller, New Jersey. Jimmy, go ahead. Thanks for calling.
Yes, I just want to say you got a very good show there. It's very educating. I like that. Yeah, just comment to say that it is a conspiracy going on with our government that is so unfair to us. Have you ever seen that movie, The Edge of Darkness, with Mel Gibson?
Oh, yeah. Sure,
yeah. And his daughter was poisoned simply because of the fact she was able to find out what was going on with the corporation she was working for.
Yep.
And
great movie.
When Mel Gibson caught up to one of them, when he was doing the investigation, he spoke to, I guess, the senator was involved. He said, either you're hanging on the cross or you're banging in the nails, what are you going to do about it? And that's basically what's happening to us today. And I truly agree with your guest there with all the stuff that's happening, including with the bank. There's four letters of FDIC. A lot of people walk around thinking that their money insured. When they're not, if something was to happen, they'll, like you say, it'll collapse, and then we all lose out. So it's just a matter of us, keeping aware, and hopefully we can come through with some kind of confidence and come up with a better solution to avoid that. Because they're being very aggressive to get people to, sign up for bank accounts. And, I've turned it down plenty of times. And you think you got your money is in a bank account in the safe, but it's really not.
It's not there. That's absolutely right. And let me ask you this. If they did shut down the Federal Reserve, how would the system work, Michael? Take me through it.
We would go back to the system that we had when the nation was founded, the system we had under Lincoln, the system we had under John F. Kennedy. The government would create and issue the money and spend it into circulation to buy what the government needed. That money would then flow through commerce, passing from hand to hand to hand without accruing interest to that private central bank, and then be taxed back in the same amount at the end of the cycle to balance the books. And that is the public currency handled as a public utility. But the way we've had it under the First and Second Banks of the United States and under the Federal Reserve, all currency in circulation starts as a loan at interest, loans to the government, loans to businessmen, loans to consumers, and it will pass from hand to hand to hand. And even while it's just sitting there in your wallet, in your pocket, it is accruing interest to the Federal Reserve. And it is a Ponzi scheme, because they always have to find larger and larger pools of borrowers to allow the creation of new money, part of which is used to pay the interest on the old money. But always, without exception, the total amount of debt to that central bank is always greater than the total amount of money in circulation. And that is why, once you are enslaved to a private central bank, you can never get out of it as long as you play by the rules they have set up. You either have to just shut it down the way Andrew Jackson did, or you have to wait for it to completely collapse and start up the new nation and say, rule number one, no private central banks. Rule number two, no private central banks. Rule number three, no private central banks. And the first carpetbagger that comes in and says, let's restart the Federal Reserve, you grab them, you tar and feather them, you hang, saw, quarter, burn, and have the ashes peed on by a rabid dog.
Oh, no, let's not go that far. Let's just put them in a cage somewhere. Something like that.
What we need to do is set up an intervention center, because these people are addicted to money. It's a mental illness.
Yes, they are. They love making more when they don't need any more.
So we'll set up this phony bank lobby, and we'll have a dollar bill glued to the floor, wired to a spark coil. So every time they bend over to pick it up, they get a shock like they used to use to try and cure smoking.
So if they shut it down or reject it, what's the easier way?
At this point, we know that our government is completely bought and paid for by the financial interests. We have stopped being a capitalist nation long ago and have descended into complete fascism. So we're just going to have to sit quietly, patiently, peacefully, and let it implode on itself. But we need to decide now what kind of a nation we want to replace it. And we have to be absolutely adamant that we do never, ever allow the money creation authority to be transferred to a privately owned central bank, because they will run that economy for their own benefit, not for the benefit of the nation.
It's Sherry's turn in Phoenix. Hi, Sherry. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you, George and Michael?
Well.
Doing fine.
Great. Michael, thank you for such an amazing overview. I know everything that you're talking about, and I've been following this for quite a long time. Can you help clarify a little bit? So you're saying that if Congress, if there was a few good guys in Congress that you could really get to flip them over, would everything collapse at that point, or would we just let the banks go bankrupt and take our country back at that point? I'm afraid if... What I see coming is when it does collapse, then we go into the New World Order scenario. So,
well, I have no doubt that the people who are pushing for global government are thinking how they can use that crisis. But I think the real issue is nobody's trying to bring the economic system down. The problem is they can't stop it from happening. Because it was a Ponzi scheme. The people who set it up 100 years ago knew that it was ultimately going to crash, but it was going to crash after they were all dead and gone, after lives of wealth and power and privilege. So I think it's just we just have to be prepared to survive the period of confusion after it comes crashing down, and we restart this nation and the economy on its original constitutional foundations. And frankly, if I may be so bold, I think every single governor of every single state ought to be making preparations right now to be issuing their own state value-based currencies to put into circulation in the event of a crash, and just not live in this this feeling of denial that it can't possibly happen here, because it can. It happened to the Soviet Union. It's happened to a lot of nations. But again, our political leadership is just caught up in this attitude of belief that the American banking system is immortal, and we know from history that that is simply not true.
1 hour doesn't do you justice, Michael. We've got to get you back for a full program in the future, okay?
My pleasure.
Let's get another call in. We'll go to William in Tucson, Arizona West. Go ahead, William.
Hi there.
Howdy, sir.
I only started listening to your show about a week or so ago.
Glad you found us.
Yes. Okay, yes, I actually had a comment. Personally, I think it's a scare tactic what's going on with the government. But I also think that the congressmen and the senators that are pulling this scam and all this stuff better get ready to retire, because I think probably every dang one of them are going to get voted out in the next election.
Well, if we had honest elections, you'd be right.
No doubt. Michael, almost done. 30 seconds. Get out that website one more time, sir.
Okay, it's whatreallyhappened.com. And again, why is this government that is allowed to issue debt-free money borrowing money at interest from a private central bank? Every American needs to ask that question.
Michael, thanks so much for being on the program.
My pleasure.
Michael Rivero, and just an amazing, amazing person with some incredible information. I'm going to come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Eldon Taylor joins us, of course, noted author, researcher. We're going to talk about choices. We all have choices. We've all made choices in our life. We're going to have some fun and facts next on Coast to Coast AM.